Mark and Sean with me, boys. Let's wave to everyone and say hello. Good evening. Welcome everyone to Friday. We've made it through the week. I hope everyone's week's been fine. Mark, how's your week been?
It's been more than fine, actually. It's been cracker.
That's good. Very good. That's always good.
As well. So we're enjoying lockdown as much as we can and keep crushing it.
That's beautiful. And Sean, what about yourself?
The same as always, cranking along, keeping busy. I'm surprised we made it here given how busy we are. And I think it was funny that Mark missed our last episode because he was actually spending face time with a client. So we were there sitting down and we realized the whole episode went by because Mark was too busy doing what he does best, which is onboarding new clients. So well done, Mark.
Well done, Mark.
My pleasure.
It's fine. Come first. That's for sure. That's for sure. So we're live today, guys. Excuse us if if it's a little awkward. This is our first live as a team together. We're trialing out this new amazing software that the marketing team has found for us. So shout out Ryan, shout out Anna. Amazing job, guys. I'm very, very excited to see what comes out of it. Well, today's is episode one. Today's topic is going to be properties versus shares. It's the oldest argument ever made. That whether people like properties or whether we like shares. Look, everyone here has an opinion, and everyone's opinion is important to us. Whether you're pro property or you're pro shares, doesn't matter. Let us know what you guys think. Today, we're just going to have a little bit of a discussion around that and just share a few stories and ideas around the both of those topics. Now, if you missed our episode zero, which was our pilot episode, where Sean and I, Mark missed that episode, unfortunately, because he was actually working, unlike Sean and I at the time. We actually discussed the biggest loser in the Australian market and what you get from sitting on the fence. So if you missed that episode, please give us a comment. Try and look for that episode. If you're listening to us or watching us live, wherever it is, you must watch that episode. It was a cracker episode. We actually covered some really, really interesting things. Now, if you are new, you don't know who we are. My name is Keshav. I help people invest in real estate. I've got Sean. He helps people invest in real estate. And I've got Mark. He helps people invest in real estate. So yes, shares versus property. You know that we're going to have a little bit of a bias when it comes. Well, we've got facts. We've got reasons for this bias today that we are going to cover. So if it's your first time, welcome, welcome, warm welcome. A big hug from me and the team. And if it's your second time and you watched a little bit of us before, welcome back. You know exactly what this episode is going to look like. If you haven't hit the like, subscribe, whatever button, wherever you're consuming it, please do. That really helps us and supports us. So talking of shares versus property, Sean, let's get started with you, mate. I would love to know your thoughts and let's start this conversation, shares versus properties. So tell me a few stories.
Well, you know, when you're talking about shares versus property, it's such an age-old argument, right? You've got the big guns coming out. Everyone's got their own natural biases. Keeping it completely as objective as possible. Obviously, there is no right or wrong answer here. There are people that are heavily leaned towards shares that have done really well, and there are people that have leaned towards property and have done really well as well. I suppose the idea or the stance that I take and that we take as a team is that shares gives you one added element of power that property gives you one added element of power that shares doesn't, which is something known as the power of leverage. And I know we talk about this on a daily basis, right? Power of leverage, where you can leverage four different things: other people's time, other people's experiences, other people's skills. But the most important thing is leveraging other people's money. And I'll get some banter from the guys that love shares talking about the fact that you can actually leverage with shares, right? 50%, sometimes 70% with a great track record in the form of margin lending, which is super risky, but you've got to have it. But anyone with a good enough income, anyone with a decent enough track record of savings can get into the property market and extract 90% leverage, which can't be done on shares. So for me, answer long story short is the power of leverage. And there are some fun stories that we'll get into. I think Mark and I have some nice input about sharing a great story we've had in the recent history of 2021. But if Mark, you wanted to add something to that, feel free about
100%. Mark, what are your thoughts? Let's get this warmed up. Let's get this room warm.
Yeah, so we'll get it warm, actually. So myself and Sean, or Sean and myself, I should say, went to a little meeting a little while back, which we were invited by someone who does invest into EFTs, if I'm not mistaken, or ETFs, I should say, and in the share market. And he took us on a big, long, winding road about, you know, how to be mentally committed to it and whatnot. And we thought, okay, we'll give the guy the time of day. We'll listen to him. But the long story short is that we walked away with a couple of hefty fines on the cars. Didn't really learn too much apart from what we knew. And, you know, I mean, look, it's a long-term game, I think, in both respects. I always do say to the clients, every client that comes on board, whether you're a seasoned investor, first-time investor, whether you're making $1 million a year or $100,000 or, say, $50,000 a year, you know, I always make sure that they understand that we're not here to give you cryptocurrency results. You know, we're not here to give you, you know, share market.
Aren't people wanting to go straight to the moon?
Well, I tell
I'm
going to
get the fake blood from crypto lovers.
We're not the ones for you, and they appreciate that as well, because, you know, again, whether it's stock shares or real estate, I think you've got to be in it long term, whichever path you go down. I think one thing we know from, let's say, February, March last year in Australia was shares took a much bigger hit than what property did. And for me, that's enough, I guess, I wouldn't say enough evidence, but I'd say it's enough for me to kind of look at it and go, well, you know, if I only had a certain amount of money and I was deciding which way to put it into, I would probably go real estate first, knowing that it takes a bit more for real estate to kind of plunge, if that is the word you want to use, as opposed to shares, where we know that the market can be a lot more volatile. The real estate market is.
Fair enough. Just to add to that, and I completely agree with you. Often I hear the argument of, hey, shares are so liquid, I can take my money and run, and property is illiquid. But saying that, when COVID happened and when shares are so easy to sell and moving around in property is difficult, that barriers to liquidity is what protected the values of the asset. Look, for me, I completely agree with both of you. There are pros and cons. There's no right or wrong, but the way I look at it is very simple. Taking a point from Sean, hey, if I've got money, if I've got, say, $100,000 and I have the borrowing capacity, I have the serviceability to be able to borrow money, I would go property every single time because of the leverage aspect. And we'll talk about leverage for people who don't understand that through this episode. For me, if you don't have the money, you've got $500 to your name, I still would put it in the stock market or the share market, because the banks ain't paying us anything at the moment, right? Interest rates, all-time low. People and the banks really aren't making much money to pay us much money. When I look at shares, I understand they're highly liquid, they're easy to diversify. So I can be in biotech and some fintech startup. I can be part owner in a real estate business, whatever it might be. You can get action everywhere you want. And there's low transaction fees. So for example, I don't need to pay stamp duty every time I buy a share, which I understand. But what I also understand is the share market is quite volatile, right? So a lot of people super sometimes gets cut into half when there's a movement in the marketplace. Selling stocks, very much like real estate, have the same capital gains problems, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can get away on your investment property if you move into it and it's your principal place of residence for all purposes, right? And potentially it's emotionally driven. I find them really volatile, where they're big players like your Elons and your Amazons, where one wrong tweet would shake up the market, versus if I had an opinion about a certain suburb, I don't think a certain suburb would overnight lose $500,000 of its value. Now, for me, when it comes to real estate is obviously, we've got a bias towards it, but I understand real estate from a context of Australia, right? I truly believe when you are in a certain country, you got to understand the flavor of the economy. So when I say flavor of the economy, let's talk about market caps. So if I had to compare residential marketplace versus the Australian supermarket, the pension fund, if you want to call it, the ASX or our commercial real estate. So to give you context, guys, as of today, our residential market, from my understanding, is sitting at $8 or $9 trillion, right? I saw this really interesting article on with this boom that we've had. And then the Australian super, in comparison, is sitting at around that $2 trillion mark. ASX is around that $2 trillion mark, give or take. And commercial is about that 1 to 2. So even if you rounded it all up, two for super, two for ASX, two for commercial, that's $6 versus $9 trillion in the residential market, you know? And that says something. That says something. So that's not, and think about it. So all of these decisions, all of this money parked in the certain section of wealth creation has been people's choices. Australians choose and feel safe to park their money in residential real estate over the Australian stock market, the super as well, it's mandatory, you got no choice, and the commercial market. So that says a lot about what people choose to do. And your property or your asset is only worth what one is willing to pay for. And somehow, for some reason, Australian residential market keeps coming out on top year after year after year. So if you ask me as an investor, shares versus properties, look, very simply, if I had to give you a really good answer, hey, if you've got the money, you've got a job, you've got a business, you can borrow money, I would go property first. If you don't have the money, you're trying to save up a deposit, it's not going to harm. If you know what you're doing, you're not being a clown, you're not trying to get rich quick, you're not trying to go to the moon, then 100% shares could be a thing. Low barriers for entry. You're a student, you're in uni, you're in year 12, put $200 a month in a, I don't know, in an ETF, in one of your Vanguard. That's better than leaving it in the bank. That's what I'll say.
And you know, right. So funny. Mark was talking about this story about how we were taken down the rabbit hole by one of these clown investors who had more than $500,000 in his share portfolio that he generated in 6 years, that we realized was just because of 6 years of parking all of his disposable income into the market, and he averaged about 20% growth. Big whoop. When you're looking at 20% growth into the share market, he felt like he had to train us on mindset when we train people on mindset on a daily basis. That's the first thing. Second thing was, when you compound leverage into it, I could have on the spot given him a snapshot of saying, okay, let's go back in time. So if you started with 80 grand in shares, let's take that 80 grand and buy the property 6 years ago and see what the return on property would have been. His only argument to that was that property's not really passive income. So there are a few gray lines around this 100%, but we're not one of those property crews that would go around telling people, hey, don't do shares or don't do ETFs, right? The idea is that, yes, having a bit of a healthy balance is great. Mark and I talk about this all the time. We love dabbling into shares on the side. But here's an interesting question for the both of you. If you're only given one asset class for the rest of your life to invest your money into, with shares versus property, which one are you choosing, Mark?
Cryptocurrency.
Just one asset class only. Which one would you pick?
Look, me personally, I'm Italian, so what I know best is real estate. It's what I've been grown up and taught, and it's what I've parked most of my money into. So for me, it's real estate. Not trying to be biased, but that's what I would choose.
With me, Sean, honestly, it would be real estate. And again, this is with no bias, and I'll just quickly share my screen, actually. And just to what you've just told us, there's I'm literally going on this website online. I'm just going to wait for it to load up so everyone can see it. Just give me the just say yes, can see it, Sean or Mark, so I know that you guys can see it. Perfect. So Mark, to your, and Sean, to your question, if I had $100,000 parked and I make no other deposits, and the average performance, let's say, has been 11% of the ASX over 10 years, and basically my initial deposit of $100,000 with no regular deposits, I just park it and leave it there, so it'll be worth about $298,000. So I would have earned about $198,000. But the same $100,000 can be used as a deposit for, say, something which is $750,000, for example, over 10 years with the same growth, you're looking, and that's the question of leverage, right? So if I can put my 100 grand, borrow another 650 from the bank, and if I can get my tenant to pay for it and get tax back, I don't want to overcomplicate this, but simply put, it costs me anything more and I just had to hold the asset, I can see the same $100,000 is today worth 2.24 million. And the amount of equity I have in this property is about 1.4 million. And the other thing this brings me to is in real estate, I can access my profits without having to pay capital gains tax, which is a big win for me. I can be buying this piece of real estate and actually release my equity and park that, use that to buy a car, a boat, go on holidays, buy another investment, whatever it might be, without having to pay a cent in tax. But with my shares, for example, if I made that $150,000 and I wanted to take that back. So in my head, I just go very simply put, I know I'm in Australia. I know the market sentiment around real estate in Australia. And when I look at it as an asset class compared to everything else, if you're in a position where you can get access to leverage, it's a no-brainer. It is the fastest and safest way to accelerate your wealth if you know where you're buying, how you're structuring your loans, and you have a plan in place. It's not rocket science. And look, and I understand it this way, okay? And guys, jump in, correct me if I'm wrong. If you've got a different opinion, 100% open ears. We in Australia are a service-driven economy, okay? So we don't have, the last Ford and Holden factories have disappeared. When I say service-driven economy, we don't have the factories in our GDP. So we've got mining, we've got financial services, tourism, education, a little bit of agriculture, whatever it might be. And predominantly what that means is our economy is made up of knowledge workers. Make sense? And where these knowledge workers are coming from, to give you context, 55% of population growth is due to overseas immigration, okay? So unlike older economies where there's that seventh, eighth generation of the Indian descent, Italian descent, Chinese descent, whatever it might be, a lot of people today in Australia are first or second generation. So what that means is if I landed here, I don't have mum and dad's house to live in. From the day I land, I go either buy or rent something, right? So that first property, and this is a basic need, like no one's going to live on a bus stop, guys, right? The other thing is what I really understand about Australia is this section of society, real estate as a market is required for us as a country. Real estate hires the most amount of blue collar workers in other than any industry. We don't have factories. So when Mark or Sean go buy a house, from a civil engineer to a bricklayer were hired. You've just created employment for 50, 60 people directly or indirectly through that. Every time there's a land subdivision, you got the truck is coming in, people are pouring in concrete, apartments, houses, whatever it might be, right? You are creating employment. And what does employment create? Employment creates jobs. Jobs create taxes. Taxes pay for the lifestyle we live, and the lifestyle is what attracts more and more people coming into the country. So why would I not park my money in an asset that the government favors, the people need, and is the spirit, is the soul, is the crux of a country that is predominantly growing in knowledge workers, right? Who do not have any other way to sustain themselves. They move, mate, you get on a plane with your wife and kids and you fly to a strange country, the first thing you're looking for is, dude, am I gonna have accommodation? Where are my kids gonna go to school? And you're only moving if there's job opportunities, and the sort of job opportunities here are service, right? So for me, when I look at all of these factors, it's a no-brainer when I watch the performance of real estate. I don't get surprised when people say, oh, you know, there've been double digit growths and $500,000 properties in Sydney have doubled or tripled. Like, I think I was watching a Aussie home loan article the other day where they said by 2054, the median house price in Sydney is going to be $6 million. And I really am not surprised. And some of you listening to this might just go, that is just crazy. But it is true. In fact, I actually have for you guys today a very, very interesting picture to share with you that I found. So let me try and see if I can find that on my computer that I can share with you. Well, I'll get the team to share with you afterwards, but it is a very interesting picture. I might get the team to share with you afterwards. So I'm just going to read it out to you. New texture brick homes, ready to occupy, built in many districts. Inspect all weekends, okay? And this is an ad from AR Homes in 1970. Their address was 346 Church Street, Parramatta, Arthur Robinson and Sons, okay? They said ready to occupy homes from $7,000 to $15,600 in Blacktown, Fairfield, Kellyville, Toongabi, St. Mary's, Pendle Hill, Baulkham Hills, Wentworthville. In 1970, if I told my client, and it's only 50 years, okay? If you're 35 years old, 30 years have just passed. So don't say, oh, it's 50 years ago. No, 50 years is nothing. A property went from $15,000. Can you imagine, like, Mark, think about it. If you told a client today, hey, mate, you're buying this property for $15,000, by the time you're 75 years old, if this guy bought it when he was 30 or he was 85 years old, this property is going to be worth $2 million. He would have said you're the biggest liar.
He kicked me off his farm.
He would. But this has happened. And this has happened because of the facts that people love real estate in this country, and they will continue to love it. There will be ebbs and flows, but and that's why I find it safe. Sean, what about yourself?
Yeah, the main point of difference here is that for all those things you mentioned earlier, which is, you know, the supply of new jobs into the economy every time you get into residential building. So when there's a supply of new jobs into the economy where you're supplying for trades, you're supplying for the concreters, you're supplying for the new property managers, the lawyers, all those guys in the process pay tax in the process. That's the main reason why you're getting the biggest tax benefit back from the government by being a property investor. On top of that, what you're doing is you're saying, if I have enough property, I'll be so wealthy that I don't need the pension in my retirement. So the government's saying thank
100%.
You for that. Lastly, because we do have a housing problem, housing in capital cities is super expensive. You've got a situation where every time you supply a new investment, that's one less home the government has to build. So that's why they're saying thank you again. So the juiciest tax benefits that you're getting are lie in that residential wealth building market. So 100% it is the main strength.
100%. Either ScoMo looks at you. Sorry, Mark, you go.
No, I was just going to add to that as well. What both of you have said is, I think what we need to weigh up as well in today's market is, whether it be stocks, shares, businesses, bonds, other investments outside of real estate, let's say, that yield a return, you would notice most people park their cash into real estate, whether it be an investment or whether it be a development. You'll notice a lot of people end up putting their money, let's call it some form of return, which is being caused by real estate. And I think, you know, even if we look into, let's say, the financier spectrum, so the lenders and whatnot, you know, there's a lot of people that invest money. Let's look at, let's say, a second-tier bank, for example, where you've got mum and dad investors that are parking maybe $100,000 to get a 5% return per annum into a bank, right? And this bank obviously lends money to, let's say, a developer or an investor looking to take on a commercial purchase, whatever it be. The banks are lending these, let's call them mum and dad investors or consumers money into the real estate market. They're not giving, I mean, there's only a few or a handful of banks, or let's say first tier banks, excuse me, that are lending for stocks and shares, they call them margin loans. And look, again, I'm a rookie in that space, so I'm not going to comment too much, but we can see that even in a peer-to-peer lending spectrum, people are lending for real estate, right? There's a lot more people that lend in a real estate spectrum as opposed to a startup spectrum, because there's a lot more risk involved in it. The people that lend in, let's say, to startups, for example, are those, what I've found from the past, let's say, you know, people that have done super, super well in business, maybe real estate as well, whatever it is, right? They've taken on a large amount of profit, and they've got a little fund which they put into startups in order to burn taxes. Okay, so it goes into a startup. If it yields well and it goes well, fantastic. If it doesn't, well, you know, it's a tax deductible write-off. So I think we've got to look at what mum and dad people, let's say the mum and dad, or the average Australian, what do they park their money in? First, have the clients in the last 12 months that have made $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 in the share market, but the only reason they're in the share market is because it's giving them a better return than being in the bank. But in time, they're going to extract that cash to put it into a deposit in a property. And again, that's not, you know, pushed by us or anything like that. That's what they've come to us saying that they're doing. So I think another thing to add to that as well is, you know, one thing I've recognized, you know, over, let's say, the last 10 years is that in Australia, we're very influenced by, let's say the big wide world of influencing, let's say social media, okay? Social media, a lot of the heavy hitting type of marketing content, whether it be financial advice or whether it be just, you know, I don't know, girls in bikinis or whatever it is, usually come from the States, the United States of America. So to a degree, some people may crucify me on this or not, but to a degree, we follow what's going on over there, right? And like a domino effect, you know, it all kind of follows on over here. But I think one thing that's a lot stronger than one thing that we have in the market or the US market is our real estate economy. Yes, there are pockets in the US that are through the roof. You know, you go to New York and you're spending ridiculous amounts of money on, you know, property that's 10 times smaller than what you'd pay for here in this country. But, you know, I think it's come to light now that the Australian real estate market is, you know, definitely, you know, edging closer and closer and closer to number one spot. And not just for a 5 minute stint, but for a long, long time to come. And that is because the whole country here is real estate focused.
And if you look at median values, our median values in Sydney are ridiculous in Australia in general compared to so many parts of the world. Like, I think if you're looking at Greater New York, we have them beat by a bit. So obviously keeping the Upper East Side out of the equation, you're comparing Upper East Side with the likes of things like Vaucluse and Double Bay the way we have over here. But, I mean, if you're just looking across the board, 40 minutes, 45, 50 minutes out west, houses, matchboxes for $1 million. Tell me, the U.S. doesn't even have that. It's ridiculous.
Sean, just to add on that, Mark, you had such a valid point. And what we don't realize is we're what, five million people in Sydney, give or take, 5.5, whatever it is, nearing 6 million people, whatever it might be. New York is a 10 million people city. We're not too far away. COVID put a spanner in the works, and where I'm sitting right now, I genuinely, I'm very excited. Now, again, I have a bias because I have exposure in the marketplace. And people who don't are really feeling this, you know, there's this huge stress out there saying, shit, how are we going to get even buy our own home? And I understand that, appreciate that. But once the borders open up, this is no borders open up. This is mid-pandemic, what we're experiencing. Once the borders open up, I wouldn't be surprised if he came to me and said, hey, properties in Sydney are as expensive as New York or even more expensive. Their houses and pots point setting for $100 million. I don't know if you guys have seen that show on Amazon with the eastern suburbs and these listings. People are buying $20, $30, $40 million homes like they were nothing, right? And often we get in our own head and you think everyone's circumstance is very similar to yours or your friends, but it's not true. In the greater economy today, there are people running different races and people who are in a position to do something are doing something, hence property market is moving so quickly. The rise has only been because someone has gone up their mark. Someone has gone and bought your neighbor's house for $100,000 more than you did consecutively over 3 or 4 months, pushing up median prices 20, 30, 40% across capital cities. Now, speaking of capital cities, I have a really, really interesting graph to share with you guys today because I came across this this afternoon and I thought it was quite interesting. So let me know when you guys can see this. It's basically a graph showing us the movement. It's almost like a race from 1970 to 2019 on how the property prices started to go. So Sydney was first and then followed by Canberra, and then we had Perth, Melbourne following fourth, Adelaide and Hobart. And we can see how over a period of time property prices have changed. And I love the way this was visualized. I absolutely love the way.
Perth just overtook. Melbourne's back. Will Melbourne beat Canberra? Guys, yes, it did.
But the joke here is we're watching this in a snapshot, right? We're watching 1970 to 2019. This one is up to, we're watching this on a snap, and today it would be even further away. But you can predominantly, common factor here, again, has year on year, people have chosen to buy real estate. One, it's a basic need. You got to live in a home. Everyone wants their own home, at least have a roof over their head, right? The second thing is you can see how various cities have moved up and down. Canberra, even though it doesn't have the population or the infrastructure or the employment that other major capital cities might have, but Canberra, people in Canberra earn more money per head than anywhere else in Australia, and they've had the most secure jobs. And you can see that reflect with the pollies there controlling the real estate market quite well, doing really, really well for a country, for a city that is got less than one third the population of any other big capital city. And we can see there in 2003, there was a little bit of Darwin and so on and so forth, but Sydney was always leading the pack, and we could see that others followed suit because money did migrate domestically. New immigration went into other cities for people because Sydney started to become a barrier. And I see that happening today. Like in the next 5 years, Melbourne, I think, is 30,000 people off Sydney. Melbourne has very similar jobs, opportunities, very much like Sydney, and Melbourne's going to soon overtake Sydney in population. And Melbourne is tracking in prices, according to me, at least 5 years or 7 years behind Sydney. So if people who are sitting here today and going, shit, I've missed the boat, and you know, it's really, really hard, and they're trying to save up this deposit, guys, today, by the time you save up $250, $300 to buy a property, the ship has sailed. The only way to pay catch up is to park your money in other income generating assets, get that leverage working for you, because you're just chasing your tail otherwise. So I just wanted to share this little clip here to give people context of how quickly things go, how quickly things move. And often we are in our own head. And again, we're going to start to see a little bit of media rhetoric again. And I'm going to publicly say this, give it till February next year. We're going to talk about the boom going bust, the market crash, these geniuses who predicted the 40% crash come out of the woodworks and say, now is the time. I think they just want to come out every single time and sell news articles. And that's what's going to happen. For me, it's very simple. If you are in the marketplace, you are someone who's looking to buy shares versus properties, there's no right or wrong. Understand your investment strategy. Understand what your financial outcome what financial outcome do you want? Understand what sort of assets do you want to control? And really be very, very clear with that. And understand your financial position. So again, I said, if you're someone who's got $1,000 to your name, don't worry about real estate at the moment. Don't worry about it. It's okay. You're better off parking it in shares. But if today you're someone who's been sitting on the fence, getting splinters in the backside, don't be scared. Don't be nervous. If you know what you're doing, the real estate market in Australia can really serve you. It's almost like I would almost go as far to say if you bought in a good capital city in the right suburb, it's almost like buying a Powerball ticket that you're guaranteed to win in 20 years. No doubt.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're worried about having missed out on the last 100 years of investment real estate, don't worry, because the market's going to do what the market's always done, like we spoke about last time. So if you've got that fear of missing out, click on this link below, jump on a virtual coffee, in the right direction. Seriously,
100%.
Whether it's even just for a conversation to say, hey, I really believe shares will outperform based on my personal strategy. I really believe that real estate's better, but it's got this one fatal flaw. We would love to have these conversations. What I realize is the power of unlocking certain conversations gives people new perspective. Like we said in the beginning, right? It's not that one's better than the other or one's right and one's wrong. The idea is we know that this is a system of how investment real estate works. Here's a system of shares, ETFs, and managed funds. Here's how they work. What are you capitalizing based on the information that's already readily available out there? The idea is everyone's got the info, right? We've all got the phones. We've all got friends. We've all got barbecue.
Uncle Google.
We've all got our uncle's Google. So the idea is about how you can capitalize and get ahead. regardless of which strategy you put forth. But that's it. I know there's a lot of people that are still going to be on the fence, but you're calling that nice and early, Kev.
You're calling 100%.
The future boom, the future bust, actually. If that future bust comes in, get in contact now. Sign here now. Because there will be some deals to be made. You do not want to miss out. But jokes aside, guys, there are always deals to be made. You just have to know where to look.
Oh, so well said, Sean. There's always some sort of deal making to be made, as long as you understand what part of the market cycle you're in, where your leverage sits as a buyer. And often people think, oh, only in the bottom of the market I have. No, that's not true. You can actually really do some good deal making in line with the market throughout your investing journey. Because again, like Mark said, we're not here to go to the moon. We're not here to speculate. We're here to take informed decisions and make sure that our money is working a little bit harder for us. Because I know a lot of us today are working from home, managing kids, have millions of things to think away, maybe away from your family and friends. We're doing it hard. So all the hard work you're putting in to make money, let's put that money to work. So eventually that money starts working for you hard enough so you can stop doing what you don't like to do and you can do things that you love to do. On that note, guys, if you like this, what we covered today, give us a big thumbs up. Give us a hell yeah if you want. Please don't shy away from putting in the comments if you want to hear about something, and we'll definitely try and cover that for you. Mark, Sean, I think that's a wrap. We can wrap this up for today. Friday Night Live, episode 1, Shares versus Properties. It's been an honor, gentlemen, talking alongside you, and we can't wait till we do this in person.
Likewise.
Let's give everyone a wave. Smile likewise. And wave. See everyone. Have a good weekend.
Have a great weekend, everyone. Bye.